Hi, Ellen. This is Armin Nicolai. Nice to hear from you. And I would be delighted to have lunch with you at the faculty club, perhaps, in Cambridge. But when you're free, give me a ring and look forward to seeing you.
Today I'm in historic Concord, Massachusetts, at the home of Dr. Armin Nicolai, who has graciously consented to be interviewed for the Christian Legacy in Psychiatry series. Dr. Nicolai has been a faculty member at Harvard Medical School for 35 years, and for the past 25 years has taught a course on Sigmund Freud and C.S. Lewis. He is the editor of the Harvard Guide to Psychiatry. He has written numerous professional articles. His work over the last 20 years led to the publication of a book, The Question of God, C.S. Lewis and Sigmund Freud, Debate God, Love, Sex, and the Meaning of Life. This then was picked up by PBS and led to a PBS documentary regarding the subject of the lives and the outcome of the lives of Freud and Lewis. And most recently, this has become a play in New York City involving the dialogue of those two men entitled Freud's Last Session. Armin, thank you for joining us for this interview.
My pleasure.
You and I first worked together years ago in 1987. It's hard to believe it's been almost 20 years. When we both worked on a report for the Surgeon General C. Everett Koop in Washington, D.C., when he was trying to prepare some kind of balanced report on the Surgeon General's report on abortion. Then later our paths crossed when you came out to Loma Linda University to discuss the PBS series and your presentation on Freud and Lewis. When I was in town a year and a half ago at some meetings in Boston, I rang you up and thought it would be nice to get together for lunch. We had a lunch at the Harvard Faculty Club, which was a treat in itself. And there I found out more about your journey to psychiatry and thought these somehow must be put down for posterity. That those of us who have a God-centered life and a spiritual worldview, we need to pass this on somehow in a better way. And so that's the genesis of this whole series, that I hope will leave some kind of trail for those who follow us. Armin, if you could tell us again a little bit, how did you get interested in this, in the field of medicine and in this nutty field of psychiatry?
When I attended high school, my parents were quite insistent on my going to college and being a doctor or a lawyer. Both of them lost their mothers when they were infants, and neither of them had the opportunity to go to college. They were sent out to work very early in their lives and had very little formal schooling. So they were quite insistent that I go to college. And they knew that if you went to college, you could go into some profession. And they knew, they kept talking about being a lawyer or a doctor.
The only two.
The only two. And whenever I mentioned the possibility of becoming a lawyer, there would be no response. And when I mentioned becoming a doctor, there would be a slight smile. And so this was their way of influencing me in terms of what they thought would be the best profession to enter into.
Yes.
And that's how I happened to.
Where did you grow up?
In upstate New York. It's south of Syracuse, and it's near the Catskill Mountains. There are many hills and valleys and where I grew up, and it's a very beautiful place with lots of trees and lakes and so forth.
So you made the decision to go to college. How did that lead then to medical school?
Right. I went to college, and I was accepted at Harvard and at Cornell, and Cornell was the college that I, as a young boy, I heard about Cornell because they were close by, and every time they won a football game, it would be all over the newspapers. So I kept hearing about Cornell.
Cornell.
That's where I applied and where I wanted to go, and went there for my undergraduate work.
Did your parents feel that if you went to college that it may have an adverse impact on your faith?
No, they. I don't recall their ever expressing any concern about that.
When you were in college or in medical school, were there mentors at that time that helped you either keep developing spiritually or who guided you toward medicine as a career?
Yes, there was one person especially who was the dean of the Baptist Bible Seminary, Vernon Grounds.
Mm.
And he took an interest in some of the young students in high school at the time, and he encouraged me to consider going into medicine, and especially into psychiatry, because he felt that there was a real need for people with a strong faith to counteract Freud's attack on the
yes.
spiritual worldview.
It is not and has not been a common recommendation to have people of faith go into psychiatry.
That's right.
Which seemed to be, at least in theory, with theoretical psychiatry, kind of abandoned. Christians or people of faith had avoided that specialty for just those reasons.
Right.
Was it a direct path then into psychiatry for you?
Yes. After that, it was a direct path. You know, in reference to your previous comment, you know, Freud did make a strong attack against the spiritual worldview. So that when I was growing up, people, you know, said, you know, whatever you do, don't go into that field.
I've heard that so often myself.
Yeah.
Vernon Grounds has been now with the Denver Seminary for years.
Yes.
Did he send you books or material that kept this seed alive about thinking of a spiritual worldview and philosophy?
Constantly. He was wonderful, and he sent me books continuously, and still does.
Still a good mentor.
He's still a good mentor. He just thought that there was a real need for believers, people who had a strong faith, to
yes.
go into that field to counteract the... you know, the influence of those in the field who used it to attack the spiritual worldview.
If I remember correctly from our lunch conversation at the faculty club, somehow you wandered into surgery and got away from the thought of psychiatry. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, when I finished medical school, I had the opportunity of taking either a straight medical internship or a straight surgical internship, and I enjoyed doing things with my hands very much, and so I chose surgical internship with
yes.
the notion of possibly going into neurosurgery. I was on a call one night, and we were on call like all day and all night and all the next day.
In New York City?
In New York City. And
at Bellevue?
Yes, and a young woman was brought into the emergency room unconscious, and she was found unconscious on the floor of a subway car. And I tried to get the resident on call, and he was tied up, couldn't come.
The medical resident?
The medical resident.
Yes.
And then I tried to get the surgical resident, and he was tied up and couldn't come. So I had to wait there for one of them to get free. Well, while I was waiting, I noticed that the patient's hand moved, or a finger moved. So I asked the patient if she were awake, if she could hear me. And there was no response. And I said, well, if you can hear me, would you blink your eyes? And she blinked her eyes. Then I began talking with her. And she began to respond by blinking her eyes. And then gradually she began to answer in one word sentences. Yes, no, yes.
Little by little.
Little by little. Finally, she began to speak. We talked at great length, and then she got up and walked away. And I thought, wow, if you can, it's possible to accomplish this without surgery and without any medication. Yeah. This is for me.
I went into psychiatry.
I'm sorry.
That's fascinating. Could she tell you what had happened? What caused this loss of consciousness?
Yes. Yes, she did. As I recall, she was from England, and she was engaged to be married to someone in England and came over here to the United States to visit some relatives. While visiting these relatives, she met a young man and fell in love with him. While she was engaged to someone.
In England.
In England.
Yeah.
And as the time came for her to go back to England, she became more and more anxious about it. And then, as I recall, she blanked out on the subway and was found unconscious and brought into the hospital. And that was where I made contact with her.
What a remarkable history.
Mm-hmm.
And how many cases have you had like that since then?
I can't remember another. If this was psychiatry and you could heal somebody without surgery, without medication, this is what I wanted to do. But I haven't met anybody like that, but I've certainly had a great deal of satisfaction working in the field.
If I could switch to some clinical questions about your career and what you do and how you do it, do you think that you have a reputation for having an interest in spiritual things?
That's a difficult question for me to answer. I would say, yes, among my colleagues, I think that there's recognition that I have an interest in the area of spirituality.
What's been the good and the bad about that?
You know, it's hard to say what is good or bad. There's certainly nothing that I'm aware of that's been negative. I think among my colleagues, they often will... if I'm in a meeting and something comes up that is spiritual or religious, they will often address certain questions about to me in the staff conference, right.
I've often found that just as people with a spiritual worldview and believers have shied away from psychiatry because of thinking somehow it's impossible to incorporate the two, that people in the field are also very wary of those with a faith-based lifestyle, thinking that somehow we will be biased and somehow need to push our worldview on patients, and that we have a different agenda rather than just treating patients, that we're out to make converts. And I didn't know if that had been a downside in your career or if you felt that pressure.
I'm not aware of experiencing that. And if people, you know, have harbored that reservation, I haven't been aware of it.
I know you've done a lot of academic writing and teaching in your career. Do you do clinical practice? And if so, do you do psychotherapy as well?
Yes, I spend most of my time that I'm not teaching, seeing patients.
Doing clinical work.
Doing clinical work. I enjoy that very much. I think that if you like people, there's nothing that's more engaging and enjoyable than working.
So true. In your practice, do you find people wanting to discuss issues of faith or belief? How does that come up in your work, and how do you deal with that clinically?
I think that people often will want to discuss their faith. And I often will look for clues to open that door.
Yes.
For example, if they say, I was so afraid I was going to be late, I just prayed that I wouldn't hit a lot of traffic on the way over. And So I will note that, and then sometime during the interview I'll say, you mentioned that you prayed on the way here. Is that just a figure of speech with you, or do you, is that part of your, is prayer part of your life? And use that as a, an entree to explore the spiritual.
Are there times when you think that issues of faith are best not addressed?
I think it's very clear if a person has a lot of unresolved conflict toward the spiritual, it's probably best at least while you're establishing rapport with the patient to certainly to not get involved in that area.
That was a guideline that I was always taught. Always get to know the patient well first before you attempt to do any kind of discussion of the spiritual. Otherwise, it seems like that we have an agenda other than what they're bringing to the hour.
Mm-hmm.
Armin, from your perspective, how does a psychiatrist with a spiritual worldview and a faith differ from a psychiatrist, any other psychiatrist, who is balanced and well-trained and has a secular worldview? What difference does that make?
I think the main difference would be that he would have insight and understanding into the patient with a spiritual worldview that a person without that background would not have.
Do you find patients want to discuss that part of their life if they feel safe with you to do that?
Yes, I think patients are often very open and very eager to discuss this part of their life when it's a significant part of their life.
For years you have studied and researched the lives of C.S. Lewis and Sigmund Freud, both individuals who started out without a spiritual worldview and atheistic. And one became more of that way, and Freud became more and more convinced, more and more embittered during his career, that religion was clearly an illusion and a delusion. C.S. Lewis made a 90-degree turn in his life and became one of the most well-known apologists for a Christian worldview. You've been able to maintain that dialogue in a public secular setting for years and dealing with something which could be explosive and controversial without having it become that way. What's been helpful, do you think, in allowing that kind of dialogue, dealing with this friction between religion and psychiatry that has been historically there since its onset? What have been some of the things which have allowed you to discuss this in a way which is productive and avoid of confrontation and fights all the time?
Mm-hmm. I think the main reason is that in the course that I teach, the courses that I've taught at both the medical school and the college, I've insisted on the students developing a critical, objective assessment of both worldviews.
To examine them both.
To examine them both.
As critically as possible.
As critically as possible. No one has objected to that.
Armin, in your book, The Question of God, you're careful to avoid words that would be controversial and cause unnecessary friction. Specifically when Lewis changes his perspective from a materialist worldview to a spiritual worldview. A common word could be used as conversion, but that carries a lot of connotations. You'll use the word transition, which I think is a nice vehicle to talk about the same subject without provoking controversy.
Yes, I tried to avoid language that evokes a negative reaction among people that don't embrace the spiritual worldview.
Freud and Lewis disagreed on many things, and from what we know, they never actually met. But in your book, on page 242, it said, Freud and Lewis agreed on one question, that the most important question concerned God's existence. And you were careful to mention that both of them had very conflicted relationships with their fathers, and that sometimes we often get confused about who God is based upon difficulties people have in their own relationships with their parents, and particularly their father. And I quote, "If we possess a strong tendency to displace or transfer feelings from parental authority, especially the father, onto present-day authority figures, how much more might we distort our concept of an almighty authority whom we cannot experience with our senses? If this holds true, we must be careful that our concept of God, whether the God we reject as unbelievers or the God that we worship as believers, that that notion be firmly based on the Creator revealed in history and not on our neurotic distortions of Him." To me, that seems the pivotal work of this book.
I agree with you that sums up the whole purpose of writing the book and what I wanted to convey.
It's such a moving passage here at the end of the book. "We must also be careful to not conceptualize or judge God by the faulty actions of His fallible creatures, whether those in the Bible, televangelists who go to jail, or priests who molest children. All fall short. Jesus of Nazareth was a gentle and forgiving person to the woman at the well who sought forgiveness, but severe with religious leaders who failed to live up to what they professed." The book, The Question of God, is now a play in New York City, Freud's last session, and it's been enjoyable to watch this become a book and then picked up on PBS and now in the theater. Certainly that couldn't have happened without a lot of careful thought, and it allows the discussion to stay alive. C.S. Lewis, in writing to Malcolm, said that we may ignore, but we can nowhere evade the presence of God. The world is crowded with Him. He walks everywhere incognito, and the incognito is not always easy to penetrate. The real labor is to remember to attend, and in fact, to come awake and to remain awake. Armand, if you could speak to residents or medical students or someone interested in a career in medicine or psychiatry, much like you were years ago, and you could be a Vernon Grounds to them, what words would you have for someone considering this specialty?
Well, I think I would encourage them that if they enjoyed people, if they liked people, that there would be no field, no area that would be more satisfying to them than this field of psychiatry. And I would encourage them to follow their interest, realizing, of course, that it's a long and difficult process, the many years of training and education that are involved.
Do you feel like the emphasis in education in psychiatry toward making psychiatrists more psychopharmacologists than therapists will have an impact on who chooses this career?
I don't know, but I fear that that might happen. Mm. The main motivation, I think, is to have an interest, a deep-seated interest in other human beings, and a deep interest in people. And if you do have that, then I think that there's no profession more gratifying and satisfying than the field of psychiatry.
I want to thank you for taking time out of your day this afternoon to meet with me here, to be part of this series. And it's my hope that this will be of use to people in future generations. So often those of us with a spiritual worldview in the field of psychiatry, we're not well connected to each other. And so we feel like we're kind of making our own path through the forest, when in reality, many people have traveled this path ahead of us. And I hope that this tape will be an educational tool for them in some way.
I hope so, too.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.